Short Rounds.
Welcome back to the Unknown Soldiers Podcast. I am your host, James Hauser. What I got for you today is another short round, and this is another short round where I expand on something from a bigger episode I didn't have time to go into in that episode. Your expansion pack, your DLC for the main episodes. But I don't charge, there's no microtransactions involved. Still, huge thank you for everyone who contributes and donates to the podcast. You keep me just barely in the green on this thing. So, in the last few weeks, you may have heard episode 54, Glory of the Khalsa, where I talked about the Sikh people of northwestern India, their traditions and culture and history, the rise of the Sikh Empire, and its destruction by the British. I also mentioned that after the Anglo-Sikh Wars, many Sikhs decided to fight for their conquerors. They joined the British Army, often forming their own separate Sikh regiments and fought in many wars of the 19th and 20th centuries. And today, I'm going to expand on that. This short round is about the military history of the Sikh people after the fall of the Sikh Empire, and not just under the Union Jack. Sikhs have historically made up a large part of the armed forces of the post-British Republic of India, and many Sikhs who immigrated overseas have taken up arms to defend their new homes in Canada, Australia, even the United States. The Sikh Empire might have vanished in 1849, at the end of the last episode. But the legacy of the Khalsa army, the people who still call themselves the Khalsa, lives on into the 21st century. As always, this is not just history, but military history. There's some dark and bloody stuff going on. Podcast remains PG-13, language is clean, content is not. All my sources are within the Big Sikh episode source post on my website, that's where you can find it. Finally, any errors, mispronunciations, or mistakes are my own. All the information you're about to hear is accurate to the best of my knowledge. This is a real story about real people who don't deserve to be unknown soldiers. September 12th, 1897. Just another day in the Northwest Frontier, the mountainous border between British India and Afghanistan. The Northwest Frontier was one of the British Empire's trouble spots throughout the 19th century, with lots of isolated outposts and fortresses constantly being raided and ambushed by the local Afghan tribes. One of these forts was Saraghadi, and in 1897, Saraghadi was garrisoned by a handful of sepoys of the British Indian Army. Their regiment was the 36th Sikhs. Only 21 Sikh soldiers garrisoned Saraghadi, 18 privates, 2 junior NCOs, and a senior NCO. The senior NCO was Ishar Singh, a 20-year veteran who held the rank of Havildar, the Indian equivalent of a sergeant. A British officer described him.
Ishar Singh was a somewhat turbulent character whose independent nature had brought him more than once into conflict with his military superiors. Thus, Ishar Singh, in camp, a nuisance, in the field, magnificent.
Anyone who served in the military will know this guy. Excellent in the field, excellent on the job, gets into all kinds of trouble in garrison. But Ishar Singh and his 20 soldiers were about to pass into legend. Saraghadi was an isolated mountain outpost a few miles southwest of Peshawar, a single small blockhouse and a signal tower with a shed. The signal tower functioned by heliograph, a flashing mirror that could transmit messages over a long distance using Morse code. Like there's two towers all the way on either side of this mountain range, and you see the flashes indicating like signals. This signal tower at Saraghadi is the only reason we know what happened there on September 12, 1897. At about 9 o'clock a.m. that morning, almost 10,000 Afghans came flooding out of the hills to surround the outpost. Private Gurmukh Singh used the heliograph to send a distress signal to the British commander at nearby Fort Lockhart. The British commander replied that no help could reach Saraghadi in time. The 21 Sikhs were on their own. Gurmukh Singh continued to send a stream of reports as the Afghan numbers grew to almost 14,000 and the tiny garrison prepared to resist to the end. 14,000 Pashtun Afghan warriors against 21 Sikhs. The British on the other end of the heliograph learned that the Afghans demanded a surrender, and the Sikhs refused. All of this information is being sent by Gurmukh Singh across the heliograph to the British. It's the only reason we know this narrative. The Afghans tried once, twice, to breach the wall, only succeeding on the third attempt. The 21 Sikhs, massively outnumbered by over 400-1, fought like giants, racking shell after shell from their Martini Henry rifles, stabbing with bayonets and swords, their beards choked by dust and their turbans stained with sweat and blood. As they began to fall, Gurmukh Singh flashed the news of their deaths to his superiors. Down to 20, now 15, now 10. Even Sergeant Ishar Singh fell. Until there was one. As the Afghans closed in over the bodies of his fallen comrades, Private Gurmukh Singh sent his last message, picked up his rifle, and stood at the door of his signaling shed. He brought 40 Afghans down with him. According to Sikh legend, although of course he was the last survivor, and he didn't survive very long, so there's no way to tell. Private Gurmukh Singh was yelling the Sikh war cry, Bole Soni Hal, Sat Sri Akal, which roughly translates as, one will be blessed eternally who says that God is the ultimate truth. Yeah, the Punjabi version is much, you know, more succinct there. When British forces recaptured Sardargadhi a couple days later, they allegedly found over 600 Afghan bodies around it. If this is accurate, that means each Sikh soldier accounted for 28 Afghans. The 21 Sikhs and their epic last stand have passed into British, Indian, and Sikh military legend. There have been documentaries and books and plaques and statues, and in 2019, a big-budget Indian war film called Kasari, which is just about this battle. The British and Indian armies have ceremonies and military honors for Sardargadhi Day, and Sikhs around the world remember the name with pride, like every Sikh child grows up at least knowing about this event. No chronicle of history's epic last stands is complete without Sardargadhi 1897 and the 21 Sikhs. So decades after the fall of their empire, decades after the Sikh empire, the Sikh state, vanished, Sikh soldiers were still winning glory and achieving martyrdom on the battlefield. And they were doing it under the flag of the empire that had conquered them. Historically, this is not uncommon. Lots of empires recruit their best soldiers from among their former enemies. In every battle the British fought in India, and many they fought overseas, their Indian troops, or sepoys, as they were called, made up the bulk of their army. Most units in the Indian and Pakistani armies today trace their founding to these sepoy regiments. The British never could have conquered India without Indians. But why did Indians fight for the British, the people who were invading their country? Lots of reasons, especially economic. 18th and 19th century military life sucked, but compared to subsistence agriculture, compared to the normal wages of an Indian worker, three square meals, a solid paycheck, and a pension didn't look so bad. Like, pay for a British soldier was low in Europe, but it was really high in India. And for the Sikhs with their warrior tradition, marching off to war was their natural, masculine, traditional thing to do. So when the Sikh Empire falls, they're like, well, how do we go to war now? The British are like, bruh, we got you. We're the British Empire. If you're looking for a good war, we are always going to have you covered. On the flip side, the British were very impressed by the Sikh performance in the Anglo-Sikh Wars. Like, hey, those dudes are pretty tough. We felt that one. Let's get them on our side. So in 1846, between the First and Second Anglo-Sikh Wars, mind you, the first two Sikh battalions were inducted into the British Army, soon to be followed by many more. And keep in mind, these would have been veterans of Ranjit Singh's Khalsa signing up for these first few units, so they would have passed down that tradition throughout the rest of the British military history. And the British bent over backwards to appeal to Sikh tradition. They declared that only Khalsa Sikhs who followed the 5Ks could enlist in the new regiments. The enlistment of Sikhs notice in 1851 said this:
No Sikh is to be required to cut either his hair or his beard, and all who enter the service with Kesh are to be required to continue to wear the hair after that fashion.
Sikh identity was enforced in the uniform and discipline codes of these Sikh regiments.
Every countenance and encouragement is to be given to their comparative freedom from the bigoted prejudices of caste. Every means adopted to preserve intact the distinctive characteristics of their race, their peculiar conventions and social customs.
Most Indian Army units were led by British officers. Like, you have British lieutenants and captains and majors commanding these Indian battalions. But even the British officers in the Sikh units were ordered to salute the Guru Granth Sahib, the holy text, whenever they passed it, just to cater to Sikh traditions and religion. So the British are actively promoting these ideas of the Sikh people. These concessions to the code of the Khalsa made British service popular with traditional Sikhs, and enforced the preservation of the 5Ks. At a time when Sikh political autonomy was non-existent, there was a very real danger of Sikh identity vanishing, the Sikhs merging back into Hinduism or Islam, or them losing their traditions. The British Sikh regiments enforced those traditions. They served as a visible symbol of the Sikh separate identity, a source of pride and aspiration, a continual reminder of what it meant to be Sikh. That's why I said in last episode, a lot of times the British Army did a lot to save Sikhism during the British Empire. Irony of ironies. Not all Sikhs served in exclusively Sikh units. Lots of them served in the Punjabi infantry regiments, where they were like part of the regiment but not the full regiment, or in the cavalry or artillery units. Sikhs served the British Army in highly disproportionate numbers. They were less than 1% of the Indian population, but they would make up about 20% of the British Indian Army over the next century. One reason that the British drew so heavily on the Sikhs was the notion of martial races, that certain ethnicities or certain bloodlines were racially better suited for warfare. Like, it was in their genes to be good at fighting. By the late 19th century, the British recruited most of the Indian Army from these so-called martial races, who made up a relatively small part of the Indian population. They included the Gurkhas, the Rajputs, the Jats, the Dogras, the Kumaunis, the Garhwalis, and of course, the Sikhs. Now, a lot of this martial races thing was just cuckoo racial nonsense, like phrenology, physiognomy, eyebrow measuring claptrap. Lots of British colonial administrators attributed these martial qualities to the amount of Aryan blood in northern Indian and mountain peoples. So you get where this is going. Like, their higher proportion of white European blood is what makes them good warriors. I'm going to call BS on that one. But there was also a much more pragmatic reason for relying on these ethnicities for the army. They were minorities, and Britain was playing divide and conquer. If the majority of the country doesn't want you there, you recruit the minorities into your army because they don't like the majority of the country you're trying to rule, so they're going to be more aggressive and have less in common with them. Empires love to recruit minorities and people from the fringes into their armies for this reason. They're good at enforcing internal operations. They will be more loyal because they have less in common with the majority. Case in point. In 1857, much of the British Indian Army revolted against their overlords. Not all, but quite a bit of it. This war is often called the Sepoy Mutiny by the British, or the War of Independence by Indians, or the 1857 War by people who want to stay neutral. But lots of British Indian units, like I said, did not mutiny. The Sikh regiments stayed loyal to the British government, and their loyalty was one of the critical factors in crushing the rebellion. Like, they were one of the main forces the British used to defeat the Sepoy Mutiny. Why would the Sikhs side with the British against their fellow Indians? Number one, that fellow Indians thing wasn't really a concept yet. That sort of pan-Indian identity just wasn't really a thing yet. Like, the Sikhs saw the British and Hindus and Muslims as equally foreign enemies. Number two, lots of the mutineers had just fought for the British against the Sikhs only a few years earlier, so the Sikhs said, nah, screw those guys. They're kind of returning the favor. Third, the mutineers adopted the last Mughal emperor as their figurehead, and the Sikhs did not have fond memories of the Mughal Empire. The British might suck, but Indian Muslims and the Mughals were the ancestral enemy. Their loyalty in 1857 secured the Sikhs' place in the new British Indian Army. For the next six decades, they were among the elite units of the empire, fighting in multiple campaigns across the globe. They fought in China in the Opium Wars in 1860 and the Boxer Rebellion in 1900. They fought in Africa against the Ethiopians in 1868 and the Sudanese in 1885. Thousands of Sikh soldiers fought in the Second Anglo-Afghan War, which I talked about in Episode 34, Revenge of the Graveyard of Empires. Sir Frederick Roberts, Bobs, specifically requested Sikh units for his epic march to the Battle of Kandahar. If you look at the list of regiments in these battles, yes, again, there are Sikh regiments, but there's also the 5th Punjab Infantry, which contained three companies of Sikh infantry. There's artillery and cavalry with Sikh men serving in those units. So even in units that don't have Sikh in the name, there are still lots of Sikhs. And the Sikhs were always called to man the northwest frontier with Afghanistan against the turbulent Pashtun tribes. Sarangarhi, which I talked about at the beginning, was only one of many battles on this frontier. Sikh units and largely Sikh Punjabi units played the prominent role in the Chitral Expedition of 1895 and the Tira Campaign of 1897 and 98, which featured, among other things, a very young reporter named Winston Churchill. One example from the northwest frontier showcases the determination and skill of the British Army Sikhs. In 1879, a squad of the 45th Sikhs was on a recon mission when they were attacked by a large force of Shinwari Afghans. Their British officer, Lieutenant Barclay, fell wounded. There was this idea that, like, Indian troops wouldn't fight unless their British officers led them, but the Sikhs disproved this idea. This squad refused to abandon their officer. They waged a fighting retreat with half of them carrying the LT while the others fended off the Afghans with bayonet charges until they made it to their base. So the Sikhs were some of the British Empire's most reliable and steadfast soldiers during its heyday in the late 19th century. But by the 20th century, they were about to face the greatest test of all. When World War I began, the British government drew on its Indian army to fight on every front of the conflict. Sikh soldiers found themselves in combat in China, German East Africa, Gallipoli, Iraq, Palestine, and on the Western Front in France. The 36 Sikhs of Sarangarhi fame fought in the Siege of Tsingtao, Germany's Chinese outpost, the home port of the East Asia Squadron, see Episode 26. The 29th Punjabis, a mostly Sikh unit, fought on the slopes of Mount Kilimanjaro against Paul von Leto Vorbeck's Askaris, see Episode 41. Other Sikh units went to Iraq, where they helped to capture Baghdad in 1917. But very soon after the British Army had entered the Great War, it was decided to send two Indian divisions, the 3rd Lahore and the 7th Meerut, to France. Of these divisions, about a quarter of their infantry units were Sikh or mostly Sikh. So from 1914 to 1915, thousands of Sikhs saw combat on the Western Front. And this was a kind of warfare unlike anything Indian soldiers had ever imagined. One Indian soldier wrote home to his family after several months.
"Do not think that this is war. This is not war. This is the end of the world. This is just such a war as was related in the Mahabharata about our forefathers."
The two Indian divisions fought on the Western Front for a year, enduring the massive artillery barrages, screaming charges over no man's land, and bloody futility that came to define the Great War. They fought in Flanders Fields, and in the great battles of Neuve-Chapelle, Aubert Ridge, and Loos. Indian troops suffered miserably in the winter of 1914-15. They were absolutely not acclimatized to Northern European weather. At Neuve-Chapelle, the three Sikh battalions that participated lost almost 80% of their number killed or wounded. One British newspaper described Sikh units in trench warfare.
"We heard that during the night, one of the Sikh regiment had to recapture the trench, which the Germans had taken by surprise, and that their bayonet charge was so tremendous that the enemy did not dare counterattack. Almost immediately after that feat, an order came not to allow the Indians to uselessly expose their lives by walking out of the trenches. The fact was that, in order to show their contempt for death, some Sikhs had refused to hide themselves in the trenches and had immediately drawn a fierce fire on their regiment."
Gotta think a lot of this is probably just the long-sought tradition of martyrdom. Well, you know, it's World War I. If you really want martyrdom, you're not gonna have to look very hard. In late 1915, the Indian divisions were transferred from the Western Front to serve in the Mediterranean against the Ottomans, mainly because of how badly they'd suffered in the colder climates of Northern Europe. The Indian divisions took part in the final offensive against the Ottomans in 1918. At the Battle of Megiddo, near the field that the Bible called Armageddon, Sikh soldiers were triumphant in World War I's last major campaign outside of Europe. Around 130,000 Sikhs fought in World War I. Over 1 out of every 7 military-age Sikh men enlisted, and they made up about 20% of the British Indian Army. They still fought in their turbans, refusing to wear helmets, even as they carried machine guns and gas masks and followed tanks across no man's land. Estimates of Sikh deaths are kind of a crapshoot. Like, we know that about 64,000 Indian soldiers died in World War I, which is higher casualties than the United States, but it's hard to know how many of them were Sikhs. Based on their proportion in the army, I would hazard an estimate of about 15,000. The story of Sikh soldiers on the Western Front was featured in 2018 by the Punjabi language war movie Sajjan Singh Rangroot. You can find trailers of this on YouTube if you're curious to look at how the Indians view their service in World War I. There's an interesting mix of emotions there. And of course, it's the Indian movie style, the Bollywood movie style, that can seem a little bit jarring to Western viewers sometimes. In 1921, Sardar Ishar Singh was a machine gunner, serving in Waziristan on the northwest frontier. The Afghan tribesmen launched an ambush that wounded Ishar Singh and threatened to overwhelm his squad. Ishar Singh, despite being wounded, recaptured his machine gun from the enemy, held off their attack, then ran back and forth under fire to a local river to fetch water for his squad. He even shielded a medic from enemy fire with his own body, while the medic patched up a wounded soldier. Ishar Singh was awarded the Victoria Cross, the first Sikh recipient of Britain's highest military award. He would later rise to the rank of captain and fight in the Second World War. The British Empire could not have survived the Second World War without the Indian Army. The Indian Army of World War II would eventually number 2.5 million men, the largest volunteer army in human history, and about 300,000 of them were once again Sikhs, and once again they served on many fronts. In Africa, Sikh battalions fought in the deserts of Egypt, Libya, and Tunisia against the forces of Erwin Rommel, the Desert Fox. Yet, like, look online, there are photographs of Sikhs in their turbans, riding in armored cars, wielding Bren guns and Thompson submachine guns, following tanks across the minefields of El Alamein. They fought against the Italians in East Africa and Ethiopia as well. Like, the Sikhs, you know, the Sikhs were part of the British army in 1868 that invaded Ethiopia and killed Emperor Theodosius IV. They're also part of the army in 1941 that liberates Ethiopia and puts Haile Selassie back on the throne. On March 16, 1941, the 1st 2nd Punjabi and the 3rd 15th Punjabis launched an amphibious assault across the Red Sea and recaptured the Somali port of Berbera, which was, much forgotten today, the first successful Allied amphibious assault of World War II. When the British stronghold of Singapore surrendered to the Japanese in 1942, many, if not most, of the captured Indian soldiers were Sikhs, and many would die in the harsh conditions of Japanese POW camps. But Sikhs would fight extremely well for the next several years in the Burma campaign, the nasty, difficult jungle fighting along India's eastern border, the northeast frontier, if you will. 6 Sikh soldiers would earn Victoria Crosses during the fighting in Burma. These include Naik Gyan Singh of the 15th Sikhs. During one battle in the sweltering jungles of Burma on March 2, 1945, when his unit came under fire, he made a one-man charge with his Thompson submachine gun, destroying multiple Japanese machine gun nests and killing the crew of an anti-tank gun that was trying to destroy their supporting tanks. Almost 20 Japanese bodies were found along his trail of destruction. Gyan Singh received his Victoria Cross from King George VI himself at Buckingham Palace on October 16, 1945, and would go on to serve in the Indian Army after independence. He rarely talked about his VC action with his family or his loved ones. He had just lost too many friends that day. Sikh units also fought alongside Allied forces in the Italian campaign from 1944 to 1945. Several thousand Sikh soldiers died in the liberation of Italy, some of the nastiest fighting of the war. They embodied the legacy of the Khalsa at places like Monte Cassino, the Gothic Line, Gemano, and the Santerno River. In 2011, the Italian Sikh community paid to have a monument erected in the Forli War Cemetery near Bologna in Italy. It depicts a Sikh soldier representing all the Sikh veterans who fought across multiple continents in World War II. Again, we're not sure exactly what the Sikh death toll of the war was, but it had to have been high. 87,000 Indian soldiers died in World War II, and the price was much higher among the martial races, who still made up 95% of the infantry formations. So, like, the supporting services tended to be most other people in India. The Sikhs made up most of the combat arms half the time. Sikhs had paid a very high price in both world wars for an empire that claimed to fight for democracy, even as it denied democracy to its overseas subjects. But that was about to change in a couple of years. In 1947, the British left India and granted India and Pakistan their independence in the partition. Almost all the Sikh soldiers serving in the British Army, including many, many, many World War II vets, transitioned immediately to the Indian Army, with the result that at the birth of the Republic of India, considering how, you know, the Sikhs were a large part of the army before that, almost 33% of the Republic of India's army were Sikh, and almost 40% of the officer corps, a massive overrepresentation for their smaller numbers. And this trend has continued. The Indian Army still contains all Sikh units like the Sikh Regiment and the Sikh Light Infantry, along with high proportions in the Jat Regiment and the Rajput Regiment. Sikh soldiers have been on the forefront of all the Indo-Pakistani wars, along with wars against China and everywhere else. In the Indo-Pakistani War of 1965, the Indian Air Force was led by Marshal of the Indian Air Force Arjan Singh. Arjan Singh was a Punjabi Sikh who had won a Distinguished Flying Cross in World War II for leading his fighter squadron against the Japanese. The ground forces in the 1965 war were led by Lieutenant General Harbakhsh Singh, who had been one of the Indian POWs captured at Singapore in 1942. So you got all these World War II vets who were leading the Indian Army in the post-war decades, and a lot of them are Sikhs. India's highest military award, the Padam Veer Chakra, has only been awarded 21 times, and four of those have been to Sikhs. Corporal Karam Singh of the Sikh Regiment in the Indo-Pakistani War of 1947, Warrant Officer Joginder Singh of the Sikh Regiment in the 1962 War with China, a posthumous award, Fighter Pilot Lieutenant Nirmaljit Singh Sekhan in the Indo-Pakistani War of 1971, a posthumous award, and Subedar Bana Singh of the Jammu and Kashmir Light Infantry during the Battle of the Siachen Glacier in 1987. And in 2004, General Joginder Jaswant Singh was the first Sikh to become Chief of Staff of the Indian Army. So the trend of Sikh overrepresentation in the Indian military continues to this day, despite being only 1.7% of India's population. In 2018, Sikhs made up over 18% of the army. The long martial tradition of the Sikh people, combined with their over-selection by the British based on the martial races theory, ensure their prominence in the Indian military in the 21st century. But Sikh military service has not been limited to Indian armies. Overseas immigration has led to Sikh communities taking root all over the world, and many Sikhs have served their new homelands in the armed forces. This hasn't always been easy for one big reason: uniform standards. The British and Indian armies had very large numbers of Sikhs in service, actively sought them and recruited them and catered to their traditions. So those Sikhs got to serve while following their traditions and their Khalsa code. Like, the British know about these traditions, they're making allowances for these traditions automatically. But many militaries, without long traditions of Sikh service or without, like, a lot of Sikhs in their ranks, have uniform and discipline standards that are mutually exclusive with the 5Ks, and they're less prepared to grant exceptions. And there are very good reasons to want all your soldiers to wear the same headgear or to shave. Uniformity is good for discipline and unit cohesion, and gas masks work better with a clean-shaven face, which is the main reason soldiers have been clean-shaven for the last century or so. But these restrictions can also prevent potentially excellent soldiers from serving. And there are exceptions all over the place, like, look at all the special forces with their beards. Oh no, hope our Navy SEALs don't have to deal with seaburn environments. Their unshaven faces will kill them all. No one's saying that, right? For observant Sikhs, too, the 5Ks are sacred. They represent an ancient martial tradition. Lots of Sikhs would rather not serve than give them up. But despite these barriers, Sikhs served and still serve today. Canada has the largest Sikh population outside India. In 1907, Buckham Singh became one of many Sikhs immigrating to Canada from the Punjab. He got a job working as a farmhand in Ontario. And at the outbreak of World War I, Buckham Singh enlisted in the Canadian Armed Forces in 1915. Private Singh fought in the trenches of France, was wounded twice, and eventually died of tuberculosis caused by complications from his wounds. He was one of 9 Sikhs to serve in the Canadian Army during World War I. Ever since 2009, Canadian Sikh veterans and active duty servicemen hold an annual Remembrance Day at the site of Buckham Singh's grave. In the 2010s, several Sikh officers worked out a uniform standard that would allow Sikhs to serve with turbans and beards, and many still do. Though, as one Sikh officer reported in a recent op-ed, the beard does make it hard for a gas mask to seal to the face, which is always a major barrier, especially in modern warfare. Nevertheless, many practicing Khalsa Sikhs serve in the Canadian military today, deploying overseas to missions all over the world. The small Sikh communities of Australia and New Zealand contributed at least 19 servicemen to World War I. One of them, Private Sarn Singh, was killed in action on June 10, 1917, in the Battle of Messines Ridge on the Western Front, and he lies buried in Flanders Fields today. Manmohan Singh, an Indian Air Force pilot, was killed in 1942 while defending Australia from the Japanese. His name is on the Darwin Military Memorial in Darwin, Australia, and his memory is honored by the Australian Sikh Heritage Trail, opened in 2018, which includes memorials to Australian Sikh veterans of both world wars, and many Sikhs serve in the Australian Army today. Unsurprisingly, the modern British Army has many allowances for Sikh uniform standards, and British Sikhs, Sikhs living in modern-day Britain, continue to serve in large numbers. They have their own network within the British military, the Defence Sikh Network, or DSN, which puts on events for Sikh soldiers. For instance, in March 2024, the DSN sponsored a celebration of the Sikh holiday Hola Mohalla, which was traditionally a martial test of strength and fighting prowess, along with storytelling, music, and feasting. You know what that sounds like? A field exercise! What, a test of strength and fighting ability and storytelling and music, and that's just me at gunnery in 2015. So of course the British Army turned Hola Mohalla into a shooting competition, along with the traditional events and stuff like tug of war and quoits, which is a kind of ring throwing game. The festivities ended with the tradition of rong, where contestants throw neon colored powders at each other like a low tech paintball game. So in the year 2024, in Surrey, England, the inheritors of the Khalsa gathered in the country that had once conquered their empire to celebrate their continuing and still vibrant warrior heritage in service to that country. Weird stuff happens in history. Finally, Sikhs serve to this day in the United States military. The first Sikh to join the U.S. military was Bhagat Singh Thind, who enlisted in the U.S. Army in 1918 and served in World War I. He was even allowed to wear his beard and turban. He tried to gain his citizenship after the war, but this was America in its uber-racist phase, and he was denied for, literally, on his paperwork, not being a white man. You can't be a citizen here, you're not a white man. Bhagat Singh Thind finally gained his U.S. citizenship in 1936. For a long time after that, Observant Khalsa Sikhs were unable to serve due to U.S. military uniform standards, being mutually exclusive with the 5Ks. Like, Bhagat Singh Thind slipped in World War I, where everybody's like, eh, whatever. But, you know, after a certain point, these uniform standards start to be more rigorously enforced, and Sikhs are unable to serve without giving up the 5Ks. In 2009, Captain Kamaljeet S. Khalsi, a West Point graduate and Army doctor, raised an official objection to policy, soon joined by Lieutenant Tejdeep Singh Ratan. These are both Sikhs serving in the Army, but they're not wearing the beard or turban. They both filed for an exception to a policy to allow them to observe the 5Ks to serve with their beards and turbans while in service. They received support from the Sikh Coalition, an American lobbying group for Sikh religious rights. Captain Khalsi and Lieutenant Ratan received their exceptions to policy in 2009 and 2010, though this was an exception and not a change to policy. But that sort of, you know, opened the floodgates. More and more Sikhs were enlisting in the U.S. Army and raising the objection, hey, can I honor the 5Ks? Hey, can I wear a beard and turban as a religious thing? So finally, after a while, the U.S. Army agreed to a change in policy for all Sikhs who observed the 5Ks. In 2020, Lieutenant Kanwar Singh became the first observant Sikh to pass National Guard Officer Candidate School and Basic Officer Leaders Course, all with his turban and beard intact. Lieutenant Singh currently serves with the Massachusetts National Guard. He might be a captain now, I don't know, he's probably a captain by now, but it's the National Guard, promotion comes a little slower. And in 2020 also, Anmol Narang became the first observant Khalsa Sikh to graduate West Point. The final barrier to Sikhs in U.S. military service fell in 2022 when a federal appeals court in the District of Columbia ruled that three Sikhs in the U.S. Marine Corps could retain their turbans and beards. The Marine Corps, who was the last holdout, as they always are, finally gave in and allowed the Sikhs to observe the 5Ks. Observant Sikhs and their uniform standards are still a hot topic in the United States. God forbid one of these guys gets posted on Facebook, there's going to be 40 comments, and they're all going to be some flavor of extremely racist, or just, you know, a veteran grumbling about something. You know, all the wannabe war heroes start moaning and bellyaching about how the army's gone soft. They don't want you to know how they drank their way through their 2 years in Germany in the 80s. But I think any military would be lucky to have the Sikhs in its ranks. What they lack in smooth-facedness, they more than make up in discipline, morale, valor, and dedication. I think a little bit of non-standard uniforms are a small price to pay for highly motivated recruits. My only caveat is if we do head into a seaburn environment again someday, the beard thing is gonna be an issue. There's no way around that. We'll figure it out as it goes. So today, Sikhs serve in militaries all over the world, both in India and far from it. They also serve in humanitarian missions worldwide, including combat zones. In 2022, Sikh charity services delivered rations and refugee support to Ukraine after the Russian invasion. And weirdly, like strange bedfellows, the Khalistani movement, which is the Sikh separatist movement, which still has people out there in the world who want a independent Sikh country carved out from India and Pakistan, declare their support for Ukraine in the Russo-Ukrainian war. Thanks, I guess. I think it's probably just because the government of India is sort of close to Russia, but still, it's like, what are you guys going to do? But still, like I said at the end of the last episode, the story of the Sikhs isn't over, and neither is their military history. I expect that the turban, beard, and kirpan will be seen on battlefields far into the future. Of course, this has world-building potential. Imagine Sikh space marines, Sikh Warhammer paladins, post-apocalypse Sikhs, who knows? But as long as there are wars to be waged, you stand a good chance of hearing the famous war cry. From the Punjab, from the Northwest frontier, from Burma and France, from Italy and Egypt, from the Middle East and China and Australia. Bole Sonihal Sat Sri Akal. The legacy of the Khalsa lives on. Thanks a bunch for listening today. If you like what you've heard today, please encourage other people to listen or leave a review on Spotify or any other streaming service. If you want to reach out, best way is by the Facebook page, or you can email me at unknownsoldierspodcast@gmail.com. I always appreciate feedback and commentary, even if it's just kind words. I'm not perfect, so you've got advice, I'd love to hear it. I'm sort of scrambling to do these last few episodes, mainly because I'm in the middle of moving right now. We were just over at the other house laying down flooring, and now I'm back here talking about the Sikhs again. But anyway, keep an eye out for another short round within the next week or two, hopefully the next week, and hopefully within a month, I'll be finished with the final episode of Unknown Soldiers Podcast Season 2. I'm pretty sure I've mentioned what this is about, but I honestly don't remember if I have. So if I haven't, here's a little hint. Go for broke. See you next time here on Unknown Soldiers.